This is the last message in our series, Good News. Has anyone enjoyed this series so far? Has anyone learned anything from this series so far? Okay, good. You're patronizing me, except for Jared. Jared's honest. He's telling me no. He hasn't learned anything. Okay. Well, all month, we have looked to the passage in Luke 4 where Jesus stands up in the synagogue and in his hometown of Nazareth, and he reads from the scroll of Isaiah, and he reads in Luke 4:18, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners, recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." So I'm going to be honest with you guys. I had every intention of ending this series last week. And then I started feeling really convicted like last Saturday night, because God likes to keep me on my toes. And I started feeling really convicted because we were skipping that last part, the year of the Lord's favor. And that was the last thing that Jesus was sent to proclaim. But see, I wasn't going to touch it because it is a very difficult topic to cover in 30, 45 minutes on a Sunday morning. Unless there's like some foundational understanding of what it means. So it's not easy to cover something this big in one message. And so I'd kind of tabled it, and I was like, well, maybe we'll come back to that at some other time and we can do like a whole series on it, because there is multiple series worth of information in that one phrase. But I couldn't get away from it. I felt like it would be unjust to end this series without talking about it. So here we go. So I highly encourage all of you guys to take some time and to kind of dig into this topic more on your own, because it's a very rich topic, and I'm only going to be able to just scratch the surface of it today. But hopefully it'll kind of spark your curiosity and make you kind of look up some stuff on your own. So let's get started. So if you read on in Luke chapter 4, after Jesus read from the scroll of Isaiah, something kind of cool happens. He sat down. And then he said, "Today the scripture is fulfilled in your hearing." And when we read that today, we miss how scandalous it was for him to say that. But their response to him saying that shows us how outrageous they claimed that it was that he said that. So what is it that we're missing here? Like, why is it that they were like so outraged and we just read over it and just keep moving instead of going, See, what about this passage caused people that had known Jesus for his entire life? This was his hometown. It was not a big town. It was his hometown. So they knew him his whole life. They knew his family. These people were his family. They were his friends. They were his neighbors. And they were so furious when he said that in Luke 4:29, it says that they got up, they drove him out of town, and they took him to the brow of the hill on which the town was built in order to throw him off the cliff. They were going to kill him because he claimed that the scripture was fulfilled. When we read it, we don't think it's that outrageous, do we? It doesn't make us murderous. See, until I started digging into this a bit last week, I assumed that they were upset because he was claiming to be the Messiah. But now I think it goes a little bit deeper than that. So we're going to kind of get into it a little bit today. See, he could have picked any of the prophecies from Isaiah or really any of the prophetic books. He could have picked any of those prophecies to read that day in the synagogue. But see, his choice of this passage in Isaiah was very intentional. In reading it, he wasn't just claiming to be the Messiah. He was claiming that he was the fulfillment of God's Jubilee. Has everyone heard the word Jubilee? Yeah. So it's a word that you've probably all heard, but how many of you guys would be willing to come up here and explain what God's intention for Jubilee was? Rylan, you on this? You gonna? Okay. Yeah. See, it's not an easy topic. See, we have to look all the way back to the Levitical law to find the origin of what Jubilee is. So Leviticus 25, it lays out the requirements that God gave to Moses. And this is where it gets a little bit complicated, so bear with me. See, we've talked about the Sabbath before. It's a day that God designed to be set aside for the resting in his presence. It was modeled by God himself during the creation narrative. So he established the pattern himself of working for 6 days and then resting on the seventh. See, on Sabbath, work ceases, and you are fully dependent on God for your peace, your protection, and your provision. And this is why the number 7 in Hebrew culture, it represents either like wholeness or completeness. Because of Sabbath, because of that pattern. It's throughout the entire Hebrew scriptures. It's a part of the entire Hebrew culture. But see, the pattern isn't just for days. In Leviticus 25, God tells Moses to have the Israelites observe a Sabbath year also. So they would cultivate, they would plant, and they would harvest for 6 years. And then that 7th year, they were to rest. See, the Sabbath year, it was meant to be a time of rest for the people and the land. So he was teaching them how to be good farmers too, because the land also needs to rest. And during this year, they would have to be fully dependent on God for their provision. They were not allowed to plant or to harvest. They could only gather what naturally grew. And then God takes it a little bit further because he likes to do that. And he instructs Moses about the year of Jubilee. So Leviticus 25, starting with verse 8. He tells Moses, count off 7 Sabbath years. 7 times 7 years. So that the 7th Sabbath year, this is a tongue twister, y'all. The 7th Sabbath year amounts to a period of 49 years. Then have the trumpet sounded everywhere on the 10th day of the 7th month, on the Day of Atonement. Sound the trumpet throughout your land. Consecrate the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout the land to all its inhabitants. It shall be a jubilee for you. Each of you is to return to your family property and to your own clan. The 50th year shall be a year, or shall be a jubilee for you. Do not sow and do not reap what grows of itself or harvest the untended vines. For it is a jubilee and it is to be holy for you. Eat only what is taken directly from the fields. So I'm a visual person, so I made a graphic here to show you guys. So these God-given cycles of work and rest, how they work together. So Sabbath is a day, Sabbath day. Work 6 days, rest on the 7th. It's a weekly pattern. Then you have the Sabbath year. Work for 6 years and then rest on the 7th. So we have a yearly pattern. And then the Jubilee is every 50 years, there would be a year of Sabbath rest that would also be a Jubilee year. So it was a time of rest, renewal, and restoration. Everyone with me? I promise we're going to get out of Leviticus before long. So every 50 years, the Sabbath year would be a year of Jubilee, and it was meant to be rest from labor. It would be a time for grace to be received and given. It was a time of celebrating deliverance and restoration. So what would happen here? So debts would be forgiven. Land would go back to its original family line. If someone, because of a state of poverty, had sold themselves into slavery because that was a common practice, if they had become an indentured servant, basically, then on the year of Jubilee, they would be freed. Their debts would be forgiven. So this not only prevented individuals from becoming greedy and too economically powerful, but it also prevented systemic poverty. It balanced the economy. See, it was a return to God's original design for his people being stewards and managers of his creation, not owners. See, I don't want to get too deep into like the legalistic stipulations that God gave to Moses, but it's pretty interesting to read through and see how God was instructing them to deal fairly and graciously with one another. So the practice of Jubilee, it can still teach us some of the same things that it was meant to teach the Israelites. So in this graphic, so these are a few things that Jubilee can teach us. It can teach us to put our faith in God's provision. Because if you can't provide for yourself, if you can't work for yourself to provide for yourself, you have no other choice than to trust God for your provision. It demonstrated that everything that Israel had belonged to God. Therefore, they can trust him as their provider. They're only stewards. See, he is the master and we are the stewards. So we're the managers of his resources. Everyone following? Okay. It also taught that he is gracious. He is free with his provision. And since he is gracious with us, we should be gracious and generous with one another. So the year of Jubilee would be announced by the blowing of the trumpets on the Day of Atonement. Do I have any Jewish festival experts out here? No? Yeah. No, I've got to learn more about Jewish festivals. I'm working on it. So the Day of Atonement, what's that? This was another festival that held great significance in Hebrew culture. And it had four main areas of focus: mercy, humility, sacrifice, and rest. So if you want to read more about the Day of Atonement, you can look that up in Leviticus yourself, because it's pretty interesting. But it was meant to symbolize the cleansing of sin and the purification of the people. So the sound of the trumpets initiated a time of forgiveness, freedom, celebration, and rest for the Israelites. It was a wanted sound, the trumpets on the Day of Atonement. So when Jesus read from the scroll of Isaiah and he declared that it had been fulfilled that day, it was like the sounding of the trumpets on the Day of Atonement. It was the initiation of God's Jubilee. See, he was announcing that the time of deliverance and rest was now. Because he had come to proclaim freedom for the prisoners, sight for the blind, and to set the oppressed free. And he did it. See, he proclaimed the good news to everyone who had the ears to hear it. He promised blessings for the poor. He proclaimed liberty for those who had been held captive by their sin. And he healed the sick. He cast out demons of the oppressed and the possessed. And see, he had begun this work before he ever picked up that scroll in Nazareth. He was already doing it. But it wasn't until he claimed to be the one to initiate the day of the Lord's favor that they turned against him. Why? See, there has to be something that we're missing here. So let's look to the ancient scroll that Jesus was reading from. If you flip to Isaiah 61. See, every person in the synagogue that day would have been familiar with this passage. It was a very well-known messianic prophecy, and it would have been memorized by every Jewish man as a boy. And most of the girls and the women that were present too would have at least been familiar with it. So we start in verse 1. It says, "The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, because the Lord has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives and release from darkness for the prisoners," or the blind, "to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." That all sounds familiar, right? "And the day of vengeance of our God." What? Wait, what? Like, what's this about vengeance? See, that's not part of what Jesus read in Luke. Like, that wasn't recorded in Luke. So I'm sure that when he abruptly closed the scroll, sat down in the middle of this passage, it caught everybody's attention. Because they're probably just kind of dazed off, like, da-da-da-da-da, day of the Lord's vengeance, and the, what? Like, he just stopped. See, the reading of Scripture was taken very seriously. The scrolls were typically read in their entirety before the rabbi would sit down and add any commentary or thoughts about it. So reading only part of this passage, it was a statement of its own. What Jesus is doing here is very intentional, and it's very meaningful. See, he was announcing that the time of deliverance and rest that was promised by God in the law and the prophets had come. This was a huge declaration. This is what they've been waiting for generations. However, just like the reading of the scroll was left unfinished, the entire prophecy was not yet fulfilled. The day of God's vengeance is still to come. See, Jesus knew that his mission was two-part. And he was only telling them right then, like, this is the fulfillment of the first part. So vengeance, it's an ugly word, right? Like, I don't know about you, but it makes me feel kind of uneasy and nervous. Like, the idea of vengeance. I watched too many Westerns as a kid, and it's just, you know, my name is Inigo Montoya. It can be, like, a very ugly word. But see, the day of God's vengeance or judgment, it's only bad news for those that choose not to participate in Jesus' good news. See, God's vengeance is just and fair. And just like Jubilee, it serves a purpose of restoring everyone and everything to their rightful place, how he intended at creation. So for the poor, this is good news. See, it raises them back to a position of equality in their community. And remember, I'm not talking about the economically poor. I'm talking about the poor in spirit, those that we talked about last week when we talked about justice, that for some reason, whatever reason, they have not been able to participate in community as an equal. So this raises them back to a position of equality in their community. But for the economic and the socially powerful, this can be bad news. Because it brings them to a place of equality with those whom they may have oppressed in order to reach their high position. Did anyone watch the video that was posted on our Facebook page this week about justice? Anyone? 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 Bueller? Bueller? A few? Okay. If you haven't, it's really good because, like I said, I'm a visual person, and it provides a really cool, like, visual explanation of what God's justice looks like. So you can kind of see in this picture, I have a picture of it. So you can kind of see in this picture, like, the different levels that people are on. And throughout the video, it's a constant movement and leveling of people's positions. So it kind of shows a little bit of what God's justice looks like visually. So justice involves reaching down to pull someone up to your level, even if that means that you have to lower your position to reach them. The goal is equality. The goal is leveling. And I think of Jubilee with the same kind of visual. See, it's a leveling of everyone's position, both up and down. It's empowering those that are in a low position while humbling those that are in the higher position. And humbling, humility, that's not a bad thing. That's a very good thing. And before you accuse me of teaching communism, I want you to take time to read Leviticus 25 and see for yourself, it's not the same. It's not the same. It is not the same as a man-made, flawed system of politics. See, this was God's design for how his people should operate in the world as managers of his creation. It allows us to live in just and right relationships with God and with one another. So let's go back to the synagogue in Nazareth. Not Nineveh, where'd that come from? Jonah's there. See, Jesus only read part of the passage, and he left everyone in a state of confusion and tension. So what they couldn't understand is that Jesus' mission was twofold. See, he was only announcing the first part, but the first part was so good. And that's where we are still today. See, we've been hanging out on that little comma between the year of the Lord and the day of God's vengeance for over 2,000 years. The day of God's vengeance is still to come. But see, God is so good that he is patiently waiting for everyone to have the opportunity to hear and respond to the good news of Jesus. See, Jesus came to restore what sin had broken and to repair our inward beings. He offered us spiritual freedom that can withstand our outward circumstances. So what he came to say is that inward freedom and sight, it's possible now. But we live in the hope that God will reconcile our outward oppression. See, Jesus came and he announced that inward restoration, freedom, and justice are possible right now. When he comes again, it will be to announce that the restoration of the world in the new heaven and the new earth. So you guys see the difference here? There's an inward response before an outward change. See, in the meantime, we have a job to do. We have to plant seeds. Where are my gardeners? My plant lovers? You're my people. Yeah, you guys, yeah, you know. Yeah. Yeah, I did. I just told everyone has permission to go plant something today. See, according to my family, I have too many houseplants. But see, there's always room for one more. Always. I agree. And if I ran out of room, succulents can be really small. So, see, this time of year, I can't seem to get gardening off my mind. There's just something about the changing of the seasons. There's you put something in the dirt, and then you watch it grow into something that provides food and sustenance for my family. It's beautiful. It's amazing. Like, I don't know how anyone can look at a tomato plant and not see it as proof of God's miraculous power and provision. Pretty sure I've said that to you before. See, I have a confession, though. Like, I am not a patient person. I am really not. I like to know what's happening in situations. I like to, like, get in there and, like, if something needs to be pushed a little bit, like, I don't mind pushing just a little bit. I'm not patient. So what I like to do is I go to the nurseries this time of year, and I buy the biggest seedlings that I can find so I can rush the process just a little bit. Like, I like to buy plants to put in the ground. See, even though I've helped with or planted a garden most of my life, it's so hard for me to look at this tiny little seed and understand that inside it is the potential to become a plant that will produce food. It blows my mind. Yes, questions. I'm done. Y'all, plants are cool. They're really cool. So when I do plant seeds, no, you have no idea that. When I plant seeds, I tend to overplant because I underestimate the fact that each little seed needs its own room because it's tiny. Like, you can barely see it. So I need to put 10 in that spot. Just in case. And, I planted radishes a few years ago. Have you guys ever seen radish seed? They're tiny. Like, I just sprinkled it all in this thing, and they were so crap. I got nothing. They killed each other out because it was bad. So a couple years ago, we built this little butterfly garden in our backyard, and it's really cute. It's got, like, a little bird bath in the middle of it. And So the point of it is to attract pollinators, like butterflies and bees and stuff, to our backyard so they can also like hop over to the tomatoes and the peppers and stuff and pollinate those while they're in our yard. So the first year I bought plants and bushes and I planted them and I was really excited because I just knew by the end of summer it was going to be full and beautiful and it was going to be filled with bees and butterflies. And then our dog decided that it was the best place to dig. And so they all died. And then last year, we started over. We cleared it all out and we replanted it. But does anyone remember what happened last summer? It got hot. It got really hot, like record-breaking hot. And we had a drought and we couldn't keep up with watering it all and everything fried. So this year, I decided to do something a little bit different. So last Sunday, after service, we got home and pulled all the weeds out of the flower bed, and we dug up the dirt, we tilled it up and stuff, but instead of spending a bunch of money on plants, I decided, let's just try to plant seeds. And that's hard for me, because right now in my backyard, there's this beautiful little garden of dirt. See, I had several packages of wildflower and pollinator seeds, and we scattered them, me and Rylan, like, scattered them all throughout the dirt and the freshly turned soil. And each kind of seed was unique. Some were big, some were, like, tiny, some just looked really weird. Like, seeds are cool, and they're all unique. But see, regardless of how they look, they all serve the same purpose of producing and growing into a plant. But before anything could grow out of them, though, they have to be planted. See, it's crazy to me that a seed can sit in a little paper envelope for over a year and still have the potential to grow. See, on its own, a seed can't become anything more than a seed. It has to be planted and given the nutrients and the time before it can transform into something productive. So for a seed to begin the germination process, it has to have the proper amount of water, oxygen, and the right temperature. So technically a seed can sprout and it can begin the process of germination and grow without being placed in the dirt. So what does the dirt do? Well, it holds the seed. It helps create a consistent temperature for the seed and it protects it. So right after we scattered the seeds in the butterfly garden, I went to go get the water hose and stepped away from it. And almost immediately, two robins hopped down and started eating my seeds. How rude. They're just looking for food for their babies. See, a seed on the surface is vulnerable, and it's less likely to succeed in its purpose. It can get eaten. It can dry out, it can blow away, unless it's safely planted into the earth. I promise there's a purpose to this horticulture lesson. Like, it's not just me rambling about seeds, it kind of is. See, Jesus used agricultural examples in his teaching all the time. Cultivating is one of the main tasks that we were given by God as part of our purpose of being created. Think about it. Humans were created from the dirt too. So go back and read chapter 2 of Genesis if you don't believe me. But cultivating, growing, is part of who we are. But see, I don't believe that God made humans just so we could cultivate literal plants. Like, he didn't create all of us just to be farmers. We are meant to cultivate his truth, wisdom, and love throughout his entire creation. We're meant to grow people. In Matthew 13, Jesus is teaching a large crowd, and he shares this parable. He says, "A farmer went out to sow his seed, and as he scattered the seed, some fell along the path, and the birds came and ate it up. Some fell along the rocky places where it did not have much soil. It sprang up quickly because the soil was shallow. But when the sun came up, the plants were scorched, and they withered because they had no root. Other seed fell among the thorns, which grew up and choked the plants. Still other seed fell on the good soil where it produced a crop, 100, 60, or 30 times what was sown. Whoever has ears, let him hear. So last October, we did a message that looked at this parable in depth, and I'll post a link to that message in the message notes for this week if you want to go back and listen to it. But see, what's cool about this parable is that unlike most of the parables that Jesus shared, he clearly explains what this one means when his disciples asked. So he says, listen then to what this parable of the sower means. Why, thank you. I will. See, when anyone hears the message about the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what was sown in their heart. This is the seed sown along the path. The seed falling on the rocky ground refers to someone who hears the word and at once receives it with joy. But since they have no root, they only last a short time. When trouble or persecution comes because of the world, they quickly fall away. The seed falling among the thorns refers to someone who hears the word, but the worries of this life and the deceitfulness of wealth choke the word, making it unfruitful. But the seed falling on good soil refers to someone who hears the word and understands it. This is the one who produces a crop, yielding 100, 60, 30 times what was sown. So it's hard for me to plant seeds because there's so many factors involved that make the success of the mission completely out of my control. See, when you bury a seed in the soil, you can't see what's happening until the sprout breaks through the ground. And that time of blind anticipation is hard. What if the seed didn't start the germination process? Am I watering dirt? Like, what if something ate it? What if you buried it too deep or not deep enough? See, there's no way that you can know. All you can do is wait and see. See, when you plant seeds, you have to be patient. You have to trust and have faith that something is happening that you can't see. But not knowing is uncomfortable. But the process is necessary for the harvest to happen. It's so exciting when you start seeing the little green leaves like break through the ground. Does anyone else do like a little happy dance when you're like, it is there, something's happening? Okay, it's just me. All right, no, it's not me. Okay. See, planting seeds of the good news of God's kingdom, it feels the same way. You have to be patient. You have to trust and have faith that something is happening that you can't see. It's uncomfortable. But the process is necessary for the harvest to happen. See, nothing is more exciting than seeing spiritual growth start to happen in someone, in the lives of someone who you've been investing and planting seeds in. So when you plant seeds, you have to recognize that you're in it for the long game. See, we have to remember that we're still hanging out on that comma between the year of the Lord's favor and the day of God's vengeance. Side note, isn't it cool how it's a year of favor and a day of vengeance? Just saying. See, that's when the harvest is going to happen. We need to understand that we've been given the task during this time of planting seeds. The harvest is not ours to claim. That can be a hard one. But nothing we do on this earth is wasted. God uses it. We may plant seeds, and we may not ever see a result. You may never see the full harvest, but plant the seeds anyway. So I have something to send home with all of you guys today. Can I have a couple people? Daniela? Yeah, I'm going to put you to work. Can you hand these out to everyone? Yeah, let me have one. I need something to hold so I can be awkward. Aren't they cute? Okay. All right, so the band's going to come back up, and we're going to do one more song. But before, I want to explain what this is. So this little paper heart, is filled with wildflower seeds. So you have a choice to make. You can keep it, and you can put it somewhere, and you can see it every day, and it can be a reminder every day of this message, of God's good news. And it will never be anything more than it is right now. Or you can take it home, and you can soak it in water overnight, and then you can bury it in some dirt, in a small flower pot or in your yard. You can place it in a sunny spot, and you can keep that soil moist. You can tend it. You can patiently wait in hopeful anticipation for something to break through the surface of that dirt. And if you do that, you can enjoy a beautiful bouquet of wildflowers. Now, I can't promise, because I got these on Amazon, I can't promise that all of these will actually produce flowers. But I can promise that if you don't take the risk of planting it and tending to it, then it will never be anything more than it is right now. So take the risk. Plant the seeds. Share your results. I'll start a thread on our Facebook page, and you can post pictures in the comments of your buckets of dirt. And hopefully, maybe one of you will get lucky enough to have some sprouts. See, when Jesus declared in the synagogue in Nazareth that he was the year of the Lord's favor, he began a movement that is continuing on through today. And see, we've all been invited to take part in this movement. See, the way it works is he's planted his seeds of truth and wisdom and love and hope inside all of us. But it's up to us to allow it to grow and to produce more seeds to share with others. You know where seeds come from? The plants. From what the plant produces, from what it becomes, from fruit. Science teacher back here is keeping me on track. Seeds. Atwoods. But the seeds come from what a seed has produced. So the prophecy in Isaiah 61, it leaves us all with the hope that the time spent waiting in the darkness of the soil will not be wasted. So hanging out on that comma for all these years, it may feel like we're just sitting in the dirt, not producing anything, not growing, that nothing is coming of it. But Isaiah 61:11 reminds us, "For as the soil makes the sprout come up, and a garden causes the seeds to grow, so the sovereign Lord will make righteousness and praise spring up before all nations." I love that. It's one of my favorite scriptures. See, the good news of Jesus will continue being planted and growing until the harvest is ready. Every prisoner who's been set free, every person that was blind that can see now, every person that's been given freedom from oppression gets to celebrate in this jubilee. We may still be sitting in the dirt, but that doesn't mean nothing's happening in the seed. See, when the news is this good, you just can't help but share it. So Jesus stood in the synagogue that day in Nazareth, and he declared, "The Spirit of the Lord has anointed me to proclaim the good news to the poor." So what is his good news? His good news is that hope. That hope that something is growing, that something is changing and transforming and becoming something that it wasn't. His good news is hope that even though you may feel like you're just sitting in the dirt, you're becoming something more. His good news is hope. It's freedom. It's liberation. It's equality. It's justice. It's that leveling out. It's jubilee. Now, every man, woman, and child that accepts Jesus as their Savior and is filled with the Spirit, His Spirit, is also anointed to share the good news to the world. So now we can stand and we can say, the Spirit of the Lord is on me. I have been anointed to declare His good news, to proclaim His good news to the poor, to set the captives free, to help the blind to see, to set free the prisoners. So this last song, let it be your proclamation of His good news. The good news is planted in you. Let it grow. Let it produce. So it can not only become something new, but it can become enough. It can become 160, 30 times what it was before. So let it grow in you. And then go out and plant the seeds.